The Office of Management and Budget says stat sessions, Portfolio Stat, Tech Stat, and others have saved the government millions of dollars. Agencies are developing their own approaches to the stat model. Bob Bain is senior lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He publishes the Performance Leadership Report, an email newsletter, and his latest book is The Performance Stat Potential, a leadership strategy for producing results. Bob says one big problem with implementing stat sessions is convincing people they won't be bashing sessions.
I think the dilemma is that too many people watch The Wire. And The Wire gives this completely screwy presentation of what, in that particular case, a CompStat meeting is like, in which it is devoted strictly to beating up on the screw-ups and incompetence. A well-designed performance stat strategy is dedicated to improving the performance of all the units within it. And that means it has to be a problem-solving session. I mean, you can't improve competence merely by beating up on people. Accountability does not improve competence. And so you have to start with the idea that we're going to help our organization improve competence by giving them something very specific to accomplish. That might be reducing crime, as in the New York City Police Department. It might be improving service delivery, as it was in Baltimore. But something very specific that, by the way, most people think is a good idea. I mean, in New York, I think the constituency for increasing crime was very small, and they didn't count. The mayor didn't consider their votes very important. And in Baltimore, I'm sure that most citizens thought improving service delivery would be a good idea. And most people in those organizations thought it would be a good idea, though they were apprehensive about how can we do that without more resources. They aren't giving us enough dollars, enough flexibility. And so part of the discussion at a meeting is not only how are we doing against our targets, but what do we have to do next? And smart managers come to those meetings with ideas about what they would do next. But, oh, by the way, here's what we need from you if we're going to make it to the next level.
I'm struck by the conversations that I've had with CIOs, especially now, who have been through tech stat sessions at the Office of Management and Budget and were among those that expected them to be bag-it-on-me sessions. Here's what you're doing wrong, and here's how you have to change it. And they're, now that we're several years into this process, they talk about the dialogue that is that goes on in those meetings and the discussions about how do we fix this, not how did it get so messed up. And it sounds like the administration and the people that lead those sessions are really getting at the essence of what you're talking about, which is how do we all work together to try to get this to where it's really supposed to be?
When the leadership team puts this together, they are putting themselves on the line. When Bratton becomes the police commissioner in New York City in 1994, he says, I'm going to reduce crime by 10% the first year, 25% over 2 years, and 40% over 3 years. He's holding himself accountable. So he is putting himself and his entire organization on the line. When Martin O'Malley becomes mayor of Baltimore, he decides that he wants to improve service delivery in the city. That is a leadership call, a judgment call. If you or I had been elected mayor, we might have chosen something else, but that's what he chose. And he not only chose to improve service delivery, he made specific commitments. The most visible and well talked about is the 48-hour pothole guarantee. You call up 311 and report a pothole, and we commit to filling it within 48 hours. And at the beginning of that, there, I have some data in the book that shows about how many people were calling in. And then 3 years later, how many people were calling in? A lot more people were calling in. Why? Because they discovered that when they called the government and complained about a pothole, it got fixed. Most of the time we say, why bother? Nothing's going to happen.
Right.
So it's not an accountability-holding process for other people. It's, I'm establishing what we are going to do as an organization, whether it's a municipality or a police department or a federal agency, and then I have to figure out how to get my organization to produce it.
So it seems to me one of the most important elements here is very clear communication of exactly what the expectation is. You, the way you outline Chief Bratton's goals, very clear and simple. I'm going to do this by this date. And that seems to be an important element. What are the other important elements of using this technique successfully and reaching these goals?
Okay, let me just make a comment on the word goal. I tend to use the word target.
Okay.
Because goal can be something like, we are going to produce international peace and harmony. A target usually has something specific that's going to be accomplished by a specific time.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to reduce crime by 10% at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody thought he was nuts. So targets, very explicit, are important. The problem-solving meetings are important. But the last thing is leader, not the last thing, but the next thing I would put on the list is full leadership engagement. I talk about this as a leadership strategy, not a system. Lots of people would like to use the word system, and the word system has a mechanistic connotation, okay? We create the system in one organization, we copy it faithfully into the next organization, we push the start button, and the system will run wonderfully on automatic pilot, and I don't have to do anything. And that's not true. People are looking to the leadership for guidance, and I hate to say it, but they don't read the memos or listen to the speeches. They watch how people spend their time, because mm-hmm. the leadership's time is his or her most valuable resource, and the second most valuable resource is the time of her or his leadership team. If they're spending time on this, people get the idea that it's important. If they put it out there, announce it with a big fanfare, and then don't hold any meetings, people get the message really fast. They aren't serious. The last point I would just make quickly here is that making the meetings not just sporadic, but as part of the rhyme and rhythm of the organization makes them important. Whether they are repeated every 2 weeks, every 2 months, every quarter, they are part of that regular rhyme and rhythm, so people know, oh, I'm going to be back here in a month, and they're going to ask me questions about the things they just asked me today that I hadn't done in the commitments I made, and I can't wait for 29 days, and then, oops, right at the last minute, decide I'm going to finish that. I have to go to work on it now.
You mean like I did all my assignments in college when I was a student, like you have students now. Bob Bain is author of The Performance Stat, Potential Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. He's the guru of the stat movement. You mentioned that just copying how one organization goes about doing it and moving it to another one doesn't work. What are the elements of introducing this system, this way of doing things, into an organization where it hasn't been done before?
I think you should start relatively simply. You should have some easy targets, but you should start. You shouldn't go through the brilliant detailed strategic planning process, have the task force to get together. That'll take you at least a year, and you won't have accomplished a damn thing. Instead, you should say, okay, what should we do first? What should be our next target? When should we get it done by? And let's hold our first meeting. When Joe Curtatone became mayor of Somerville, Massachusetts, he went to Baltimore to see how CityStat worked. He came home and he told Stephanie Hurst, the first director of SummerStat, I want the first meeting in a month. And that meant that they had to figure out what they were going to do with that first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Were they going to get it right perfectly the first time? Of course not. But the way they were going to learn what the mistakes were was not by sitting around the table doing the strategic planning thing, but by actually doing it.
Yeah. The common argument that I hear about something innovative like this in the government is, well, we have a zero defect expectation. Congress is watching over us,
yes,
and they don't give us any leeway. And it seems to me the way you explain it, that may be true, but that's still not a very good excuse.
Yeah. I think everybody's got to be a little bit more tolerant of mistakes. Mistakes get made all the time in all sorts of organizations. The question is, do you catch them and fix them quickly, mm-hmm. or do they sit around and fester for a while because nobody's paying any attention? And that can happen, as the headlines have recently demonstrated, in the private sector as well as in the public sector. Mm-hmm. So leadership has to be paying attention and has to make sure that people are willing to talk back a little bit. The target's too tough. You haven't given us the resources. And then there's a discussion, a real discussion, about when we can get it done and how many resources we need to get it done.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest buzzwords in government right now, Bob, is data. And you devote a chapter in your book to data called Collecting the Data. Government is getting good, the federal government, I should say, is getting really good at collecting data. It's getting really good at collating that data so it understands what it has. It's still working on the concept of putting that data into some kind of framework that it can use to its advantage. Is that common across governments in at all levels? And how are you seeing people using data at the federal level or some other level successfully to feed their stat sessions to show them where their performance is good and where it could use some help?
I think it's easier at a police department because police departments have been collecting data for a long time. In the 1930s, the police commissioners, led by the commissioner in Detroit, convinced the FBI to start collecting uniform crime reports. So that meant that every police department had crime data already. They didn't have to invent it. They got data about outputs, which is the arrests they made. They got data about outcomes that the crime was committed. And by the way, they had a nice analytic tool, which was they create a map, put dots on it for different crimes, and you don't need an econometrics PhD to get the lessons out mm-hmm. of it. Other people have to figure out what data do we need and how do we get it. In Baltimore, they created the 311 system that told them essentially what citizens cared about, because mm-hmm. if a citizen called up and cared about a pothole, called about to report a pothole, it meant they cared about it.
Yes.
If a citizen called up and complained about not enough water pressure, a citizen cared about it. So they got data automatically about what citizens cared, and they could then spend some time focusing their energies on the things that citizens cared about. If you're at a level at which the service you deliver isn't so direct, you have to think more carefully and analytically about what data you want. I would argue that the first thing you have to think about is, well, what are our performance deficits? What are the things that we need to fix between inputs, activities and processes, outputs, and outcomes? And then how do we get the data for that? That might be easy. It might be very tough. We don't know until we identify exactly what it is and then try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, data collection is important because if you don't have data, you don't know how well you're doing. And sometimes the data tells you very explicitly, and sometimes it only tells you indirectly.
It seems to me that the data collection issue might start with making sure you're asking the right questions and making sure you're collecting the right stuff or finding where that is among the data you're already collecting. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
Yeah, I mean, what does it mean to improve our performance?
Mm-hmm.
And how would we know whether we did that? Okay, what data should we be collecting that would help us understand that? And it would all that always depends on the purpose of the organization. I always say, always start with purpose. Start with purpose. What are we trying to accomplish? And once we're specific about that, which, by the way, doesn't always happen in the public sector or the private sector or the nonprofit sector. Plenty of times, people are completely clueless about what the chief executive wants. A friend of a governor in the United States once said, "Governor, just at the point you're getting nauseous delivering your message, that's only when we're beginning to hear it." So one of the messages I have to people is, if you haven't gotten nauseous delivering your message and telling people what we're trying to accomplish, you need to do it more often.
Is that focus, though, one of the most critical elements? Because it strikes me, if you're trying to do 2 or 3 million things, mm-hmm. you're going to draw attention away from the things that are really important. And there are a lot of people who come in, especially at the federal level,
yeah.
and say, I have this list of 20 things yeah. that I want to accomplish in the average of 18 to 24 months that I'm in office as a political appointee.
Or I just went up to my committee on the Hill, and they gave me twice as many that I should do. And every one of these guys wants something done specifically. Again, I think you have to explain your message. This is the reason this agency is here. Here are how we know whether we deliver a good job or not. Here is what are the problems that are preventing us from doing that. That's what I call a performance deficit. And then what's the target for fixing that? If I was a member of Congress, every time an executive showed up, I would ask five questions. First, what's your agency trying to accomplish? Second, what are the performance deficits that are getting in the way of doing that? Third, what are your targets for fixing those performance deficits? Fourth, what's your strategy for achieving those targets? And fifth, when can we expect to know that things have improved? If people got asked that every time, as opposed to have you checked all the boxes,
mm-hmm.
People would, public executives at any level, would begin to focus. The second time they showed up for that hearing with that committee, they would be able to answer those five questions, mm-hmm. particularly if they figured out that this guy asks it every time.
Yeah. And then, he's serious about it,
yeah,
or she.
Yeah, he really cares about yeah. what we're trying to accomplish and what we got to fix and when we're going to have some progress.
Bob Bain of Harvard University is my guest. His book is The Performance Stat Potential, A Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. You mentioned the words outputs and outcomes a few moments ago. They're distinct. I hear a lot more federal officials focusing on outcomes instead of outputs. Historically, it's been the opposite. Is that a good thing, a bad thing, or does it matter for the purpose of evaluating whatever you're doing, your performance through a session like this?
Well, it depends a little bit on how you define what an output and an outcome is. The way I and my colleagues at the Kennedy School tend to talk about it is an output is what you produce at the border of your organization.
Yes.
It's something you do. The outcome is affected not only by what you do, but what society does as well. The dilemma for federal agencies is often is the outcome doesn't happen for a while. And they say, see, that's why we're different from municipal government. School systems have the same problem. School systems, I would argue, have a purpose of helping children grow up to be productive employees and responsible citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That's the outcome. Unfortunately, we won't know about the outcome for several decades. And by the way, it's not so easy to measure how productive an employee they are, let alone how responsible a citizen they are. And then we can't feed that back to the current organization to figure out how it can work better. So we need to, that's why I think we need to think about our performance deficit. What do we need to fix now
mm-hmm.
that would eventually contribute to that outcome? And, you know, even in this world of evidence-based decision-making, if the outcome doesn't happen for a while, it's really hard to use that evidence to make today's judgments.
You do a great job in this book of laying these concepts out in a way that a non-academician will be able to understand them and use them, and I commend you for that. I mentioned you're in town to talk to folks at federal
yep.
agencies. As you talk to them, is it your sense that most of the people that you talk to get the concepts that you're getting at this book and are executing them in the spirit of the way you describe them in the book? Or does that matter as much as long as they get the basic principles that you and I have talked about right and are actually improving their performances?
I think the people who come to listen to me talk, because it's an expenditure of their time, are people who are already interested in doing it. They might be doing it. They might want to do it. They might be trying to do it and trying to figure out how to do it better. But you don't bother to show up to listen to the nut from Cambridge if you don't care about the challenge of improving performance in your organization. And different people are at different levels. They're trying to go to the next level, or they're trying to start. And I think everybody at those different levels has an opportunity to learn. And so, you know, I usually do the, you know, I'm an academic, you wind me up by talk. But after the talk, we have the opportunity to have discussions. What about this? What about that? We're thinking about this. What do you think about that? There's a lot of give and take back and forth. And people are trying to think through how they in their organization will do it, because all of them, as a manager of some unit, whether they're managing the Department of Defense or some sort of little bureau someplace, have a performance problem that they want to fix and a performance objective that they want to achieve.
We're almost out of time, so I just have one final question for you. I know that the STAT process is not intended to be predictive, but I wonder if there is any metric that you know of that can give us information about whether David Ortiz or Chris Davis will have a better year next year.
I think that's even harder to predict, okay? You know, I mean, after all, they can get hurt. I mean, the good news about a large organization is how easy is it or not to predict how the organization will behave, even without predicting how an individual behave. And this is really about organization behavior, not individual behavior. But, you know, the Red Sox went from worst to best to worst. And if you think there's a sine wave signal here, maybe they're going back to best next year.
As an Orioles fan, I respect your wearing of your Red Sox love right on your lapel and your terrific tie with baseball players all over it, but I hope that you're incorrect about that. I do thank you very much for being here. Congratulations on this book, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you for having me.